Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the Donut Dynasty. Nah. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Nah. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Yeah. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the Donut Dynasty.
Diagnostic, popped it, now your team is the topic. Aton and Stompy as a team, they're unstoppable. All bold, but no bold, it is rolling a roll that I'm told. Come a bowl to a cockpit. And I just hope there's no leaks, yeah. I ain't changed my oil in weeks, yeah. How'd I get a lot of these stains on my seats, yeah. Only mechanics that I trust cause it's free, yeah. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. It's my dynasty team and it's got a couple needs. Is it this, is it that, is it picks, is it bad? Do I even have a chance, do I got it in the bag? Let me know.
Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the Donut Dynasty. Nah. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Nah. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Yeah. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the Donut Dynasty.
Diagnostic, gnostic, gnostic.
Thanks for listening to the Dynasty Diagnostic Podcast. Tune in every week for a thorough inspection of the Dynasty landscape to learn how recent news affects your roster and to gather strategic tips and tricks to give your squad that turbocharged boost it needs. Please welcome your head technicians, Aton Mosia and Sam Lane.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, what's going on? Welcome to the shop. Welcome to the show. Welcome to episode 61 of the Dynasty Diagnostic Podcast, a part of the Dynasty Trade Calculator family of podcasts. My name is Aton Mosia. I am joined, as always, by Sam Stompy Lane. We're just a couple of dummies talking about fantasy football. We decided to don the suits, figuratively, today and buck up our ideas a bit and bring in a real-life professional.
Oh, no.
You may know this man from NFL Live, caught him previously at KXEX, or Sports News Radio, or bumped into him at a Spider-Man costume at Comic-Con. Please join me in welcoming the multi-talented, multi-faceted, smoothest fantasy football TV personality around, Marcus Grant.
Wow. I don't know that I'm worthy of that introduction, but thanks, man. I appreciate you guys having me on.
Yeah, Aton likes to go over the top with our guests.
Only when it's warranted. Only when it's warranted.
You should be like, you know, the crier for like kings and stuff.
I know.
Like,
I'm gonna hire
the titles.
I need to hire you as my personal hype man, like when I just walk into a room, you know.
Perfect, man. I don't know if you guys have seen that Family Guy episode where Peter has a guy just following him the entire episode, kind of giving him like the whole hype experience every single place he goes. And a theme song. I think that's what I'm destined for. That's where we're at in life.
But it's not, man, a bad thing to be, man.
I'm super excited for the show. I know Sam is super excited for the show. I hope everybody listening is really, really pumped for the show. And, I mean, every time that we have somebody who clearly broke through and made it in the fantasy football space, the first question that kind of goes out for me is, man, what's your story? There are so many things that you can do in life. There are so many degrees that people have that don't end up using them. You seem to be one of the few guys that actually went to school kind of for the thing that you're doing right now. So I just kind of wanted to ask, you know, point A to point Z, what did you do? How'd you get there?
So out of high school, I really thought I knew I wanted to be a journalism major, right? And I thought originally that I wanted to do like serious hard news, right? Like I thought my ultimate career path was going to lead me to being like a network anchor, right? I thought I was going to be Tom Brokaw or Peter Jennings or Dan Rather or somebody like that. Got to college, went to USC, was a, like I said, broadcast journalism major. I remember the first weekend I was there, I met some guys, we became friends, we're still friends to this day. And we decided to join the student radio station. We joined the sports staff, and at some point I realized that, you know what, like this sports thing seems a lot more fun. Like this is what I do with my friends anyway, and like I can make this a career. So I decided to kind of change my tack a little bit and decide to kind of go the more the sports route. So then after graduation, I kind of was like doing some sports writing on the web a little bit for a couple of small companies. I decided I wanted to get out of that because I wanted to do play-by-play. So I spent two seasons as a minor league baseball play-by-play announcer in the California League. Did that for a couple of seasons, landed after that in just sports radio. Was in Fresno for about 5 years doing sports radio. Was lucky enough to get a job through a friend and former colleague to come back to Los Angeles, and was working for Sporting News Radio's national network for a little bit. Did that for about a year and a half. That job dried up because they moved operations to Houston. I decided I wanted to, you know, stay in Los Angeles as opposed to move to Houston. So was sitting on my couch, friends riding, smoking weed, and watching SVU reruns. And got a tip from another former coworker that the NFL every now and then is looking for people. So maybe you should try applying for a job there. So I, this was 2011. So this was actually during the lockout in 2011, but I just remember going on their website. I applied for, I don't know, maybe four or five jobs, had kind of forgotten about it because nobody got back to me because obviously they didn't know if there was going to be football. So I had sort of forgotten about it. Got a call one day from Michael Fabiano asking if I wanted to interview for a job writing about fantasy football. I mean, at this point, like, I never thought of that as a career. It was, you know, I played just for recreation or whatever to be social, but I never thought about doing this as a job. But he asked if I wanted a job doing it. I said, does it pay? He said, yeah. I said, sure, I'll come in and interview. And so the night before the interview, and I mean, this is not a joke, and I've told him this. This isn't like a secret or anything. The night before the interview, I read a week's worth of his columns, and I basically regurgitated his information back to him. A couple weeks later, I turn on ESPN. They are announcing that the NFL lockout has ended. About an hour after that, Fabs calls me and offers me the job. And here we are 9 years later. You know, I've been fortunate to kind of hang around here and be doing this as long as I have.
Hey, man, that works. Right education, right place, right time. All lined up.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. So let's go from that into, I mean, obviously, it sounds like, yes, maybe there was some serendipity involved with being able to actually land that actual interview, but you had a bunch of experience before that. You seem, like you said, to have had a pathway in mind to, if not necessarily go into the sports world, to be into the news world. So my question would be, would your advice for other people kind of looking to make the same transition be to make sure that you have all your ducks in the row, make sure that you have the education background that you had that allowed you to kind of get that opportunity?
No, see, I don't think so. I think we're in a new world now, right? And I think the more I do this, the longer I do this, and the more people that I meet in this industry, and like, look, whether it's fantasy or whether it's just sports media in general, the more people I meet, everybody seems to have a very different background, right? I mean, you know, I'm good friends with Matt Harmon, and you know, and Harmon's a guy who didn't set out to do this. I mean, he's a guy who's had incredible success doing this. He's doing big things over at Yahoo. When he interviewed with us for the NFL, he was working with developmentally disabled adults. I mean, he was a guy who had a background in social work. He just wrote about football on the side because it was a thing he was passionate about. I have another friend, Jessica Kleinschmidt, who's writing for CSN Bay Area, who does a lot of baseball stuff. She worked for the federal government in the Bureau of Land Management, right? And decided she wanted to write about baseball and now is doing big things. And so I think less than having a background in it, it's more of having a passion in it. And I think we're now in a situation where there are so many outlets to get your work out, right? You can start your own blog. You can go and create your own YouTube channel. You can use social media to kind of get things out. And I think it allows you not only to kind of get your work out, but also to kind of get your practice in, right? Where before you sort of had to kind of follow a certain track to get certain places, right? But now you can do this. You can create your own podcast, right? You can create your own streaming videos, and you can not only get your workout, but it allows you to get your practice in, get your reps in, where it was hard before because you had to get somebody to hire you. So I think, you know, sure, it's great to kind of have that educational background, but I think more about just having that passion, getting that practice in. And look, I always tell people the best way to get better at something is to watch people that you think are good at that thing and that you admire. and borrow, steal from them, right? Just copy what they do, try to put your own flair on it. But I think there are just so many ways now to kind of follow along that path. It didn't exist, you know, when I started doing this out of college.
So you're saying I need to get the full goatee, grow my hair out a little bit, and then bit. This real estate agent can have a chance?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I wouldn't do a goatee route, but yeah, you know what? Keep grinding, man. Keep banging. There's always an opportunity.
Absolutely, absolutely, man. I appreciate that. So many people that do listen to our show are doing a lot of the things that we're doing as well, are writing, are putting out blogs, are doing, you know, different podcasts and whatnot, and just trying to break into the space. And having people like you just that are so down to earth and willing to kind of share that experience, I think really, really motivates people to be able to kind of do that same thing and get along that same path and hope for the best at some point in their future. So thank you for that. We're gonna get away.
Man, no problem. Look, dude, I'll just say this, man. I was on the other side once upon a time, right? Like I was, I tell people, I was a paper man. Like I wasn't a paper boy. Like at some point, I was working for a radio station part time, wasn't making enough money. I was 30 years old, slinging newspapers in Fresno trailer parks, right? Like, I remember being on that other side, trying to get here. So like, I have so much mad respect for folks who try to come up that way. And if I can help out, I'm definitely down to do that.
Hey, man, appreciate that. I might just hold you to that one day. But we're going to get out away from like the real life questions, at least for the moment. I think that there's one question that all our listeners want to know. There's one question that is the most important one here. And that is, if you could have any superpower in the Marvel universe, what superpower would that be?
I know this is like one of those like psychological questions that like are supposed to like give you insight into who a person is. I honestly would probably pick invisibility, and you can, you know, whatever, pick whatever superhero can turn invisible that you want. Just because like there are times and like, don't take this the wrong, there's times where, like, I think we all just don't want to be bothered, right? There's just times where like people come around, situations come around, you would just rather not. And so like sometimes just the ability to turn, like I wouldn't do anything lewd or like perverted with it. I would just kind of like not be there. Like when when somebody's coming and like, you know, they're going to ask you to do something you don't want to do, you just turn invisible, right? And they come in the room, they don't see you, and you just keep quiet and you don't move. And then they leave. And then you go back to, you know, watching Netflix again or whatever it was you were doing. Like that is probably like, I don't know that I'd use my powers for good or evil. I would use them just to not be hassled.
So you would just take that Southwest getaway commercial to like the nth degree,
and just basically, yeah, completely. Yeah, essentially, yeah.
I can get, that's a take I can get behind.
Man, I'm right there with you. That's a great one. All right, and then finally, before we get into our 5-point inspection today, I wanted to ask. I mean, you've kind of done it all. You've written, you've been on radio, you've done TV. Everybody says TV is the hardest part, especially live TV, just because, you know, you have to make things, or have to make sure that things are perfect, because you don't necessarily have a second take at it. I wanted to ask you, you know, what's the most challenging aspect of being on live TV and doing these shows that you've kind of had to face over the last few years or so?
Well, so I will let you kind of peek behind the curtain here, right? NFL Fantasy Live was actually only live for the first time this past season. Like, it was sort of a misnomer. It was always, we always joked it was Fantasy Live to tape. And I'm sure that my corporate overlords don't want me telling this to people, but whatever, it's out there now. And I will tell you this, it was, for us, it was refreshing to actually do a live show, because in some ways, yes, there is that pressure of knowing that, like, hey, this is live and you can't really screw it up because it's out there. But at the same time, it's just nice to know that, hey, you know what? I know it seems sort of paradoxical, but it felt like in a lot of ways the pressure was off, because, like, hey, it's live. And, like, you go out there and you just do it. And if you mess up on occasion, so what, man? It's just out there and it's gone. You know, like, obviously you can't go out there dropping F-bombs or anything like that. But, you know, if you go out there and you say something that's a little bit weird or you stumble over it, like, you just shake it off and you let it go. And I guess for me, part of why I felt that way is because of doing radio for so long. I mean, I worked in radio for almost a decade. And the one thing you sort of learn is like, once you say something, it's gone. Like, it's out there in the atmosphere now, and there's just no getting it back. And so, I mean, it teaches you to kind of think about what you're saying, but at the same time, you don't necessarily flip out when you make a mistake. And I just think having those reps and having that opportunity sort of made it easier to transition into live television. Because I think of all the things I've done, radio is the thing I love the most, which is why I sort of love podcasting, because it's the closest thing nowadays that I get to do to that. And so so going to doing a live television show, for a lot of us, it was just really, really refreshing, because, you know, we didn't have to worry about taping something and then an hour later it changes because a guy got traded or got hurt or, you know, got arrested or something like that. You know, when in the moment we said that, you know, hey, Cam Newton's a free agent, Cam Newton was a free agent because it was a live show. So that was kind of nice.
Man, that is not the answer I expected. That's actually really All right, let's take this show where it normally goes, where the people want it to go. We're going to get into our five-point inspection today, and we're going to start with one of the things that I think actually did happen. You know, this is a thing that I think is current right now for at least however long it takes us to record this show. But we're going to talk about Robbie Anderson.
Oh my God.
In fact, let me ask you this. Let me ask you this right now. Let's settle this right now. Robbie or Robbie?
Oh, I always thought it was Robbie.
It is Robbie.
Robbie Anderson.
Fine. Well, and that's why you say Noah Font and everybody else does no fan.
I mean, like, Robbie would be 1B, right? Like Reggie Robbie, you know, like Bradley Robbie. Like, that's 1B. Like, I figure 2Bs, he's Robbie, right?
The double B got me. Robbie Anderson to Carolina. I mean, let's first talk about the implications for him. Let's first talk about the implications for Teddy Bridgewater. And then we'll get into whether or not this spells doom and gloom for a guy that a lot of people, in fact, a guy that you mentioned just a few minutes ago on this podcast, Matt Harmon, had a lot of hope for in Curtis Samuel. So what does the addition of Robbie Anderson to the Carolina offense mean for fantasy?
I mean, it's kind of hard. It was just meh. On the wish list of places I wanted Robbie Anderson to go, like, Carolina never ever came to mind for me. I mean, I thought Philadelphia, Green Bay, I know was a very popular choice, which I thought would have worked very well, kind of pairing him up with Devontae Adams. Never in a million years would have come up with Carolina. It even seemed less likely when they added Teddy Bridgewater to be their quarterback. I mean, Anderson's biggest asset is his long speed, his ability to stretch a defense, to take the top off a defense. I'll say this. I like that he got away from Adam Gase. That's a plus. We saw all the guys who got away from Adam Gase last year, right? I mean, Ryan Tannehill, Kenyon Drake, Devontae Parker. Like, it just – you have a long list of guys who got away from Adam Gase last year and had big seasons. So in that respect, that's good. But – Teddy Bridgewater isn't known as a guy who's going to stand back there and sling the ball deep down the field. I don't know how this works. The only thing I can think is that this connects him with Matt Rhule, who was his coach at Temple back in college. So maybe there's some sort of connection. There's some sort of familiarity and comfort there. But just on its surface, this is not a match. It's not a connection that makes a whole lot of sense to me.
I mean, nail on the head there with Teddy Bridgewater, 6.1 and 6.2 ADOT the past two seasons. He just doesn't throw the ball down the field. He has a good completion percentage on the deep ball, but doesn't throw it down the field. I mean, probably one of the worst situations that he could have landed in. But probably only one team is offering you double digit millions when you were looking for 14 million, probably is going to take it.
Yeah, I heard about 12 of that contract is guaranteed up front in the first year. So he's getting close to the number that he wanted. But yeah, as you said, that's probably not his ideal. Just to kind of further that point with Teddy Bridgewater and why I think everybody here on this panel doesn't necessarily think that Robbie Anderson is going to be a great fit. I mean, deep ball attempts, 15 total attempts, 1.7 per game. That ranked 37th in the National Football League last season. And this isn't something that is new to Teddy Bridgewater. As Sam was saying, his ADOT as such has been the same throughout his entire career. This has been a guy that's been more of a dink and dunk passer, more of a guy that's more focused on getting those yards after catch and whatnot. And I don't think Robbie Anderson is the guy that is necessarily going to play to those strengths. So I think that this might just be a situation where it's a push. Kind of like you guys said, maybe there's some positives just because Adam Gase is out of the picture, but I mean, are you spending a second round pick on Robbie Anderson if you had it in Dynasty right now?
Oh, goodness, no.
No,
goodness, no. I will say this, though, Sam, you made a good point, though, about, you know, not having a whole lot of offers. And I think if you're Robbie Anderson right now, you are taking whatever the first really good offer is, because look, he was kind of hanging out there and was like left without any real opportunities. Mm-hmm. And as you get closer to the draft, considering how deep this draft is going to be with wide receiver talent, if you wait too long, suddenly those offers that you did have dry up even more as teams kind of start picking up wide receivers in the draft.
Yeah, I can definitely agree with that. Let's take the other side of this. Maybe not the complete other side. We'll do that in just a moment. But at least the other side on that team, people are saying that this spells doom for Curtis Samuel. I'm not sure if I'm one of those. I think, and both myself and Sam actually had this conversation on the last podcast, that Curtis Samuel, at least in college when he was at Ohio State, he was primarily a receiver that kind of worked the intermediate parts of the field. In fact, he was he wasn't a short yardage receiver because he got a lot of yak, but he caught passes very, very close to the line of scrimmage, and I think he has the ability to do that again. In fact, if you look at all the Carolina receivers last year, Curtis Samuel actually had the most targets of any of them in the slot last year. So I think he can move to that role full-time, and I think that this is actually a boon for him. Do you have any disagreement with that, or do you have something to maybe add to that assertion?
No, I mean, I sort of was under the impression that both Curtis Samuel and DJ Moore were kind of winners in free agency without having gone anywhere. Just look, after having dealt with Kyle Allen and Will Greer last year, it couldn't really get much worse for them, right? And so I think just having Teddy B makes it an upgrade for them. I liked Curtis Samuel. I know you mentioned Matt Harmon. I mean, he is the guy I like to call the wide receiver whisperer. So when he and I have a similar wide receiver take, it makes me feel better about myself. and so I was big on Curtis Samuel last year. I know it ended up sort of being a weird season in that he had a ton of air yards, but didn't get close to 1,000 receiving yards. But I guess that speaks more probably to the quarterback play than anything he did. But I think he has a nice year coming for him this year. And I just feel like what he does and what Robbie Anderson does are different enough that I just don't see – I don't see Anderson really eating into any of his production. I just don't understand the Robbie Anderson signing for Carolina.
Just to put numbers to what Marcus is talking about, he was ninth in the league in air yards, 52nd in the league in reception yards. his target quality was 101st. His catchable target percentage was 105th. And his catch rate was 101st, but his true catch rate was 60th. So he improved, or he caught more balls than he should have, basically. So yeah, I mean, those are the numbers. And I know air yards, especially in this context where it's like, well, you just said Teddy Bridgewater doesn't throw it downfield. Yes, I agree. But he is more accurate. And like Eitan said here, said earlier, he played mostly from the backfield or from the slot for Ohio State. And that's where he got 1,600 plus yards. And that's what the Panthers drafted him as. And he was just misused by Norv Turner. So now getting that deep threat allows Curtis Samuel to come down, get those short to intermediate routes and use his best attribute, which is his short speed, and get the yak and basically be a running back with the ball in his hands.
And people just looking at production are going to pretty much write off Curtis Samuel as, you know, a guy that's not all that good. But yeah, his target accuracy, and as to everything that Sam was saying, his target accuracy was 105th in the league. But I mean, his cushion was third overall in the entire league. His target separation of 1.75 yards was 23rd in the league. His drop weight was the 18th in the league. His contested catch rate was a top 30 contested catch rate. This is a guy that was efficient kind of in the face of wild inefficiency being thrown to him. This was a guy who succeeded despite everything he kind of had to deal with. And I think, as Marcus, you were saying before, I mean, anything's an upgrade from Kyle Allen. I think Teddy Bridgewater is even a little bit more than anything. So this can definitely be a boon for Curtis Samuel's value. And if you want to take this out to the nth degree, I mean, he's not necessarily tied to that team for the longest time anyway. He has, I think, one more year that he's contracted to the Carolina Panthers. So in the event that this goes wrong, there's always the option that he can be on another team in a better situation, maybe even as a wide receiver one as early as the 2021, assuming we have a season. So I think Curtis Samuel is definitely a buy right now. There's a lot of misinformation kind of being spread out there about Curtis Samuel, and I think that people need to get with it. And like you said, understand what Matt Harmon's talking about when Matt Harmon talks about wide receiver. I think you kind of need to go with it and just trust your gut and hope that, you know, everything that has happened, at least coaching-wise, is going to make that offense work a little bit better than it had before. So I'm excited for Curtis Samuel moving forward. But, I mean, this big – it wasn't really a trade, but this big free agency signing also had impacts on the other side of it. Robbie Anderson was a free agent from the Jets. They've now signed Breshad Perriman to replace him on the Jets. Last season, Breshad Perriman was a decent wide receiver for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, especially when injuries eventually took Godwin and Evans out. Breshad Perriman was definitely the guy to, you know, make up the slack and keep that passing game humming, minus the interceptions. But do we think that this is another situation where Adam Gase, I mean, he got a toy that's just too shiny for him, that he's just not going to be able to handle, and that he's going to eventually run to the ground all over again?
I consider myself to be kind of a fantasy skeptic. You know, like what we saw from Breshad Perriman at the end of last season was really great. My response is, that's cool, do it again. And I don't know, one, just again, the whole Adam Gase thing, man, he's just been an anchor on people, and that worries me. But also, I mean, let's keep in mind, right, Breshad Perriman, he was a really high, relatively high draft pick, right? When the Ravens drafted him, it never really panned out there for him in Baltimore. He could just never quite get things going. I don't know that this is the place that's going to unlock his potential, especially over a full season. I don't know that Breshad Perriman is built over the long haul to be a number one wide receiver. And you mentioned it. I mean, last year it sort of worked out because Mike Evans got hurt and Chris Godwin got hurt, and they didn't really have a whole lot of options. And like, you just had Jameis Winston back there throwing YOLO balls, right? Just like, go get it. And that worked out well for him. And look, Breshad Perriman, he helped people win fantasy championships last year, right? If you were in the playoffs and you went and snagged him off the waiver wire late in the season, there's a very good chance he helped you win a title, or at least helped you get through the playoffs a little bit. I don't believe in him. I don't trust him. And I say this as somebody who, look, I'm a USC alum, and I want to see all the Trojans do well, and I really want the best for Sam Darnold. I'm not buying into this right now.
Adam Gase, that's it. I mean, as we talk about the guys who were successful beyond Adam Gase, now we're talking about a guy who's going into an Adam Gase system. Absolutely not. I Sam Darnold is a second contract guy, I think. There's no way he re-signs with the New York Jets. And if he gets a second contract somewhere, that's where I'm buying in. But right now, it's just stay away from that entire team.
We're assuming Gase isn't going to be around long enough for that.
There's that. There's that. I want Lev Bell to get traded. Like, I want Le'Veon Bell to come back into our lives. Like, trade him somewhere else.
Like, yeah, give him the David Johnson resurgence here. Right?
I mean, the Jets have signed some offensive linemen, so maybe there's hope, but I definitely do.
But it's not even that. Adam Gase literally hates the guy. That was the biggest clusterfuck of, we're going to sign Lev Bell. Oh, now we're going to sign Adam Gase. Oh, we're going to fire the GM that signed Lev Bell. What are you doing?
Oh, that must have been like a really, really fun, like get to know each other type session. You know, between the two of them. They probably have a lot of love, a lot of mutual respect for each other. I can just imagine that that went really, really well. But I mean, going back to Bashar Perriman, I don't know. I mean, he's, I guess, ideally going to slot into the Robbie Anderson role. Say what you want about Sam Darnold. What we've seen from Sam Darnold to date hasn't really indicated all that much. I will still say that he's still 22 years old, still one of the youngest quarterbacks in the league, so there's time for this to change. But, I mean, last year, deep ball attempts, 55, 4.2 a game, 20th in the league. Didn't get in the red zone all that often. Probably has a lot to do with Adam Gase. 4.2 pass attempts per game in the red zone, 25th in the league, 25th in total attempts, 33.9 per game. Again, those are per game numbers, so I'm not talking about the whole mono situation here, but I don't think that this is a situation where, I mean, if all the defense is locked into one guy in terms of receiving, that this is going to work out for that guy. I don't know if there's enough there on offense to even give defenses any reason to do anything other than put a guy over the top of Bashar Perriman if you need him, just to completely stop the deep ball on that team. And I think that's really where he thrives. Like you mentioned, he was a former first round pick. Size, speed was why he was that first round pick. Whether he's able to use those talents in 2020 in that offense, I don't necessarily know. So I'm not super excited for Bashar Perriman. I thought this could have turned out a lot better for him. Unfortunately, it did not.
Okay, real quick, over under. Let's go 115 targets for Jamison Crowder.
I'd say over 115 targets for Jamison Crowder if he stays healthy. If he stays healthy, that's the caveat to this. But
right.
So you have who catching the ball? You have some three-headed weird monster at tight end, Herndon, Griffin, Wesco, or something.
I don't feel like have the Jets. I don't think the Jets have had a tight end since like the late '80s, right? Like they just punted on the position for the better part of my lifetime.
And so you basically have Lev Bell and Jamison Crowder. And I mean, yes, they have gotten offensive linemen, but we definitely all saw that Patriots game where Darnold was rough in that second half. So
I mean, when he was a Ghostbuster.
Yeah. So yeah, I think I'll take the over on it. Like Eitan said, barring health.
Yeah, I mean, but what do 115 targets for Jamison Crowder mean? Does that mean over 1,000 yards? Does that mean
not necessarily. No.
Fantasy points? Like, what does that mean?
He had 122 last year and only had 833 yards.
I think that's the point that we're
on. So he's kind of a poor man's Jarvis Landry, I suppose.
But, I mean, it would be interesting to at least see somebody in that offense have some success. I'm just holding out hope for Sam Darnold. Like Sam said, I hope he can get to a second contract alive. And at that point, I think then you can start to actually evaluate his performance. But before then, I mean, throw everything in the air. Adam Gase just burns teams down. And I think put him and Bill O'Brien in a room, like, it's like the Spider-Man meme. Like, they just point at each other and they don't know who's different in all of this. So it's going to be really, really fun to see what happens out there for the J-E-T-S Jets. Now, let's talk about, I guess, some real life, real news things that are happening right now. Obviously, coronavirus is shutting the U.S. down. It's shutting the entire world down right now. Everybody's kind of locked in their homes right now. We're practicing safe social distancing now by being able to do this in our respective homes on camera. You can't necessarily have NFL games go the same way. You need to have them play on the same field. And generally, there's a stadium around them with people that cheer. And a lot of those people sit really, really close to each other. So my question is this. I mean, are we in danger of missing out on the 2020 season?
You know, I don't know. It's the thing, you know, Sam and I talked about this before we started recording. I don't know. In the last day or so, I've really started to think about what this could mean. I think, you know, seeing that they are postponing the Olympics to 2021 is a big step, right? Because you're talking about the Olympics taking place in like July, August, usually sometime around that time period. So, I mean, that is squarely in the time period where we would be talking about training camps and preseason games and those sorts of things. As this theme drags on, that is becoming much more of a realistic possibility. And I will sit here and tell you, as we record this, I have zero idea. I know that, you know, as we talk, they are planning to at least conduct the NFL draft on time, on schedule. It won't be like we're used to seeing it, right? It's not going to be. And I'm kind of sad. Like, I wanted to go to Las Vegas, right? I mean, for me, it's a right. it's a 1 hour flight. It's a 4 hour drive. Like, I could be in Vegas easily, and I wanted to kind of be a part of that. So that obviously is not going to happen. I keep joking that the NFL draft is going to look like a lot of fantasy drafts, right? Like, I'm waiting for, you know, the chat room to be open. And, like, you know, basically Bill O'Brien will draft a guy that everybody had a consensus pick like three rounds later, and everybody's scratching their heads like, why did he do that sort of thing? But I legitimately have no idea what's going to happen with the NFL season. And I think the league is still trying to look. There are people that are way above my pay grade who get, you know, who have to make these decisions. And I'm sure they are huddling from a safe social distance away from each other in New York, trying to figure out what happens. But it is just as much a mystery to me as it is to the rest of you guys.
You know what? I just got that image of, if it's like those draft rooms and you have all of the GMs or owners or whatever in the draft room, just talking shit to everybody. old horse face Elway gets a little bit drunk and just starts chirping at Bill Belichick.
You know, like, the Patriots make a pick and like Belichick drafts somebody that like people literally never heard of. Everybody's like, who's that guy, you know, or whatever.
Have you seen Chappelle's show when they do the racial draft?
The racial draft, yeah.
Just like stuff like that.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, can you imagine that? Like, the Jaguars, like, try to pick somebody who got selected, like, you know, five picks earlier or something like that. Like, what are you guys doing? Pay attention, you know, something like that.
I imagine that's exactly how this is going to go. Although, as we have this conversation, I feel like this is how B.O.B. and Adam Gase do it, like, anyway. Like, they do this normally. So nothing's going to change for the bad teams. But, yeah, like you were saying, real possibility that it could be postponed. I think everybody does need to be cognizant of that moving forward. But I hope that's not the case. But, obviously, safety is the number one priority. So I just hope that our doctors, our scientists, I hope Stompy can save us all. And
save us, Stompy.
I'm trying, man. I'm like one of like three people actually in the lab right now. So I'm like Dr. Robert Neville from I Am Legend.
The last one.
You take a shotgun to work every day.
Yep. What the hell is going on? Stay away from me. I don't want to touch you.
All right, back to actual players hopefully playing football, but not playing football right now because they don't have a team. Jameis Winston, Andy Dalton, Cam Newton, all free agents currently, I think. Do these guys deserve a starting job in the NFL at this point? Do you think they're better than some of the 31 starters out there? And if that doesn't come to pass, if NFL GMs decide that that's not the case, I mean, is there an ideal landing spot for each one of these guys?
Well, I'll start by ranking them in order of like who deserves a starting job most to least. One, Cam. Look, as long as Cam is healthy, like, I mean, look, before two seasons ago, right? Like the first half of the season, Cam was playing really well. Then the shoulder got hurt and he just wasn't right and it kind of fell apart. And then last year, the foot and everything kept him off the field. So Cam definitely deserves a starting job. Then Jameis, just because he's still younger and, you know, he went 30 for 30, which, look, I mean, look, in a really ass backwards way, I sort of respect the hell out of that. You know, and so like maybe he deserves a starting job. Andy Dalton is number three on that list because to me, he's like Schrodinger's quarterback. He's either good or not good. And I'm just not sure which at this point. But he's had enough of an opportunity that I don't think I need to see any more from him at this point. I would love to see Cam go to New England. I don't know if that's going to happen or not. I just can't think Bill Belichick rides into the season, even as smart and good as he is as a coach, ride into the season with Jarrett Stidham and Brian Hoyer as his two quarterbacks. Go get Cam. go remake your offense around him and like, let's just go prosper and let's make this thing work and see what can happen there. For Jameis, it won't happen, but I would love to see Jameis come out to LA and be the Chargers quarterback, right? And look, I know Phillip Rivers threw a lot of interceptions at the end of last season and they moved on from him. And I know Jameis throws a lot of interceptions, but the difference is Jameis is at least a little bit more mobile behind a bad offensive line that he can sort of extend plays and make things happen. And when Jameis throws on the move and gets out of the pocket, he actually makes some interesting things happen there. And I think that'd be very, very fun to watch. I mean, with Keenan Allen, with Mike Williams, with Austin Ekeler, with Hunter Henry, there are pieces there that he could be successful with. You do have to live with him throwing it to the wrong colored jersey on occasion. Although, hey, look, but he had LASIK surgery, right? He had LASIK, so maybe it's fine. Maybe he can see now. Maybe it'll be okay. But I do think Jameis with the Chargers would be fun, although everything I've heard says they are really gung-ho, it seems, on trying to draft Justin Herbert and making him their quarterback of the future. So we'll see. Andy Dalton, I mean, I think at this point, like, we've seen enough. Like, he can go somewhere and be, like, a high-end backup. Maybe he can get himself in a quarterback competition. I don't know why the Bears didn't make a move for Andy Dalton, like why they went out and got Nick Foles, but I have no idea what the Bears are doing. I don't have a clue, but Dalton, I can't see him walking into a starting job anywhere.
Eitan, we're not rehashing this conversation about Nick Foles versus Mitchell Trubisky in terms of their passing abilities.
You just sit there and be wrong in your wrongness. That's fine.
Okay, go fine. But yeah, like I think a lot of people were trying to get Cam Newton to the Bears, which makes sense. I mean,
that would have worked. Yeah,
the Foles trade just in general doesn't make any sense. I try and sit here and I'm like, unless, and I'm like, no, that's still nope. So like their defense is built to win now, but what are you going to do with Foles or Trubisky? Like, why not get Cam in there who has the legs, who is more accurate or as accurate as Mitchell Trubisky or better? It doesn't make sense. But, yeah, it's wild that Jameis doesn't have a job right now. I think everybody thought going into the offseason that he was probably the top free agent quarterback. I mean, yes, Tom Brady, yes, Phillip Rivers, but I mean, how much?
I mean, because Dak wasn't going to leave Dallas. We knew that. I thought maybe there's an outside chance of Tannehill being available. I thought maybe Vrabel would make a run at his old pal Tom Brady and try to bring him to Tennessee, which would make Tannehill available. But I mean, like, if you're the Bears, why didn't you try to pursue Ryan Tannehill? Why didn't you try to pursue Marcus Mariota even, right? Yeah. Like, I feel like Mariota, Tannehill are slightly better versions of Trubisky. And like, it just seems like the Bears didn't even make a run at either of those guys. And I don't get it.
I'll say a friend of the show or John Hogue, he was talking about, cause he's a Broncos fan. We're all Broncos fans, by the way.
Okay.
he was talking about like Jameis going to Denver, just in case Drew Lock doesn't add up to what we have been hyping him to be, and it makes sense because then your defense is built enough, and that running game's built well enough that you can absorb some of Jameis's mistakes. So, like, he could end up just being a high end backup and could get a starting job for like you said, the Chargers, if the Broncos decide to go that way, but I like right now, I can't imagine where else he could land. Maybe the Steelers.
Is Jameis tall enough to play for John Elway?
I don't know.
That's the real question. That's the real question. Everything else will stem from there. I mean, if
Brock he's 6'4". Do you think that's tall enough? I thought they had to be like 6'5" or tall.
Close, man.
I mean, I feel like isn't there like a board at the Broncos facility like you must be this tall to play quarterback or something like
I'm sure.
My question is, how tall is John Elway? Like, I don't remember him really towering.
I don't think he's like that's the thing. I don't think he's obnoxiously tall. Yeah, like I don't think he's like extraordinarily tall.
But apparently, you know, things have changed. You need a couple more inches now, I guess. But just to kind of round out this whole quarterback fantasy that we're having, are we sure that the Patriots aren't just being the Patriots and being the smartest man in the room all over again? I mean, I don't remember exactly where I found this data point, but wins added is just a mark that I guess some analysts kind of use to judge how impactful this player versus that player is on a certain roster and how many wins that having this player provides to that team. Patriots ranked dead last on that chart. They've lost so many defensive starters. Now we were talking about them going in with Jarrett Stidham potentially starting at quarterback. I mean, is this not all just, you know, 3D chess to get Trevor Lawrence, to get Justin Fields potentially?
I mean, maybe, but if you're Bill Belichick, right? I mean, you are what? He's in his mid to late 60s right now. He's been coaching for a long, long time. Is he up? Is he willing to go through another rebuilding process, right? Like, I mean, you have been at the top of the mountain for so long. Do you want to try and push that boulder back up the hill again? And even as great as Trevor Lawrence potentially can be, I still think there's an element to that. Which is why I think like a guy like Cam Newton puts you in position, right? You get Cam in there. If you can draft a wide receiver, which by the way, the Patriots, for all their greatness, they have not been good at drafting wide receivers during Belichick's time there. But I don't know if you can maybe hit on a wide receiver there. Your defense is still going to be excellent again this season. There's a chance that you can still compete in your division. I mentioned this to somebody a couple days ago. So let's just say for shits and giggles, right, that like they go with Jarrett Stidham this year. If the Patriots with Jarrett Stidham go like 12-4 and win the AFC East, do we start looking sideways at Tom Brady a little bit?
I think you have to.
Right? Like, if Jarrett Stidham wins a division and he's like the Patriots are 12-4 or whatever, like, it feels sort of like, oh.
Maybe he was okay. QB.
Yeah. Right? Like, oh, okay. Yeah.
Because then you would have, like, Matt Cassel, who didn't do anything ever again, and then Jarrett Stidham the second.
And then Jarrett Stidham. Like, it's one thing when you do it, like, you do it one time with Matt Cassel, you're like, oh, wow, that was, like, a really great coaching job. Man, that's really amazing. That was just kind of a one-off. But, like, you do it with Jarrett Stidham, then it's kind of like, cause let's not forget, too, right? Like, when Brady got hurt, Jimmy Garoppolo came in and was throwing darts. I mean, and he's parlayed that into a pretty big deal in San Francisco. Like, if you do it with Jarrett Stidham, now all of a sudden, it's like, all right, this is like three times now. Like, this is like a thing at this point.
Yeah, no, I think that's a real consideration people are going to have to make, especially if things don't necessarily go well in Florida for Tom Brady. So that's definitely something to kind of keep in the back of your minds. Watching the NFL this season. But now we're going to go ahead and switch gears a little bit. We're going to go into two more quarterbacks. And I guess my question here is Ryan Tannehill, it's now a verb, Marcus Mariota. Is Marcus Mariota going to Ryan Tannehill Derek Carr? Because if there's somebody that deserves it, Derek Carr is kind of that quarterback that everybody's sitting there like, why is he still starting? Why is he still on my team? Am I wrong with that?
I mean, so here's the thing. You're not wrong, but like, do we really think Marcus Mariota is going to Ryan Tannehill Derek Carr? Because he's basically Derek Carr, but like faster. Like, mm-hmm. That's it. They're kind of the same guy. Neither one is very aggressive. They're both conservative throwing the football. Neither one's going to throw a whole lot of interceptions. So like, in that respect, they're not going to kill you with turnovers. But they're also not going to go out there and like win you a whole lot of football games. And so like, that's why, like, I mean, I saw it. I'm like, I guess good for Mariota. He got himself a job. He's going to get himself into a quarterback competition. And if Derek Carr stumbles along the way, like Mariota very well could end up as the starter there. But it just feels to me like they're sort of the same guy in a lot of respect. It's funny. Daniel Jeremiah, who was an incredibly smart guy, an incredibly nice guy. He had a really great tweet midway during the season. And it's something to the effect of Jameis Winston shoots too many threes and Marcus Mariota takes too many layups, right? Like that is sort of how it works, right? So like Derek Carr is kind of that guy. So maybe Mariota does end up getting the job, but I feel like the end result would sort of be the same. I mean, it's like, I don't know. It's like, what? It's like Carl's Jr. versus Hardee's. Like, the names are different, but it's the same thing, man. Like,
yeah, I mean, look, just looking at their stats, they're almost the same exact quarterback in terms of passing. Mariota just has 1,000 more yards rushing. So
yeah,
I did say, and I will continue to say this, Marcus Mariota landed in about the only spot where he could become a starter again, because Derek Carr is just so mediocre that it's like, well, I mean, why don't we just try Marcus Mariota for a little bit? But yeah, I mean, it's very uninspiring, to say the least. Not my favorite landing spot for many pass catchers. I think you like Josh Jacobs, and right now it's Darren Waller, but who'd they just sign?
Why, you're not going to put respect on Nelson Aguilar's name like that?
The backup to Hunter Renfro, huh? Because let's be real, you don't want him playing on the outside.
Unlike Aguilar.
Yeah. I do think that this is a situation where both of these guys are kind of going to give you the same thing. I will say that, I mean, maybe it's unfounded, maybe it's just me making stuff up in my mind, but Alex Smith had a late career resurgence in a different location, in a different locale, with a team that believed in him. Do we think that maybe the same type of thing can happen with Marcus Mariota? I mean, I feel like the two quarterbacks are kind of the same thing. A little bit mobile. Their yards per attempt aren't deep. They don't take too many shots downfield, but they're relatively safe with the football. Marcus Mariota still has youth on his side. Is there a possibility that maybe we don't necessarily see it this year, but, you know, 2-3 years down from now, when a team is looking for a journeyman quarterback, do you think that he's going to be like a Ryan Tannehill, a guy that teams maybe start to respect at that point?
I think what somebody needs to do with Marcus Mariota is convince him to use his running ability as an actual weapon. And I mean, that's what made him so amazing at Oregon. That's what won him the Heisman Trophy, was his ability to run the football as part of that Chip Kelly offense. And I feel like he got to the NFL and really wanted to prove to everybody that he could be a passer, that he could stand in the pocket and he could deliver the football throwing it. And that's fine. Look, I get it. I understand that. But you know what? Do what made you great and run with the football. And I think now that we are in this world where, you know, the Lamar Jacksons are succeeding, where Josh Allen can go out and be an effective quarterback in part because of his running ability, I think whether it's John Gruden, Mike Mayock, or some other coach has to sit down with Marcus Mariota and say, hey, look, run with the football. Look, I mean, look, I always said during Colin Kaepernick's heyday with the 49ers that I wanted somebody to strap him to a chair, Clockwork Orange style, and make him watch videos of Russell Wilson, right? And just watch how Russell Wilson played. And I want to do the same thing with Marcus Mariota, right? Where we just take him like Malcolm McDowell and strap his head down and like jack his eyes open with some eye drops and just make him watch Russell Wilson until he goes crazy. Because I think, look, he's not going to exactly be Russ, but I think that is more of a blueprint for how he can be successful as an NFL quarterback.
And I mean, we're starting to see it now where the NFL is really moving towards those more athletic quarterbacks. I mean, Lamar Jackson being the best example, but Josh Allen is there. Cam Newton Newton, Mike Vick, but now we have Kyler Murray 2 years after Lamar Jackson.
You need to mention the GOAT, PJ Walker.
Jalen Hurts is coming in, and I think he can make a pretty massive impact. So those mobile quarterbacks, I mean, even Pat Mahomes is a decent runner. Yeah. So I think we're starting to see that transition. So why not embrace, like you said, that side of you where it's like, I understand you want to be a traditional quarterback, a passing quarterback, but that's not who Marcus Mariota is. He's somebody who has speed and can make plays should be able to make plays on the fly. And like you said, he just doesn't use it like he should.
I think a lot like RG3, that Marcus Mariota got hurt again, and then kind of got to the point where maybe he's doesn't necessarily have the mindset to go out and run and create contact and maybe get hit awkwardly all over again. This might be a situation where it's a crisis of confidence more than it is really ability for Marcus Mariota. And I just think that, as you were saying, you know, putting him down, strapping him down, making him watch somebody that probably has a better arm than him, but at least has similar skill sets, I think would be very, very helpful for him just to be able to get a little bit of his confidence back and get him to again, do the things that made him such a dynamic player at Oregon. I wish for the best for a guy like him. I kind of think he got shafted just a little bit. Not that it was unwarranted. I just think that, you know, there's a human element to all of this as well. Oftentimes we look at these guys, players are players, and that's the only way that we see them. But I think that there are real fears when it comes to injuries that definitely impact these guys' careers, maybe more than they let on. But that would be the end of our Marcus Mariota conversation. I'm now going to ask you to give us the secret sauce. I want you to go ahead and tell me if there's somebody out there that maybe the mainstream's not picking up or maybe, you know, isn't as publicized as they should be that is going to be the breakout player this year. Any position, quarterback, running back, wide receiver, tight end.
Wow.
Who is Marcus Grant's number one breakout for the quote unquote 2020 season?
All right. So I'll give you two guys that I have my eye on as sort of, I guess, deep sleepers, if you will. Both of them wide receivers, both of them second year players. And both of them are guys that I really liked last year that didn't quite pop, but I'm kind of doubling down with them this year. One in Arizona is Keyshawn Johnson, who I liked him last year. I know that, you know, they had all those young wide receivers. They drafted Johnson, Isabella, Hakeem Butler, who never quite got on the field. What I like about Johnson is he's a guy who doesn't necessarily pop in any one area. Like, you saw him at the combine. There was nothing about him that necessarily stood out in any of the drills, but he's very good and very solid in a lot of different areas. He was coached in college by Jeff Tedford at Fresno State, who, you know, Tedford has put a lot of really talented guys into the NFL. For what it's worth, if you like weird coincidences, he went to the same high school and same college as Devontae Adams. You know, so there's that part. Obviously, if he can get on the field, the targets will be there for him in Arizona, because I expect they're going to run that, you know, that Cliff Kingsbury wide open air raid offense, throw the football a lot. So there's going to be opportunity for him. You know, if he can, like I said, if he can work his way into snaps and running routes, that's going to be a possibility for him. So he's a guy I like. The other one that I'm sort of doubling down on is J.J. Arcega-Whiteside in Philadelphia. Especially with the Eagles not really, especially not bringing in Robbie Anderson, right? Like, I thought maybe they would take a run at him, and maybe they did, and maybe the numbers just weren't right. I don't know. But I thought that Arcega-Whiteside last year really had an opportunity to maybe make some plays. It just never really happened. I mean, that Eagles wide receiver core just got just decimated by injury pretty much all season long. But I mean, this is a dude. Again, like, being out here in LA and being a USC guy, I see a lot of Pac-12 football, and I got sick to death of watching J-Jaw just jump ball over my USC cornerbacks for years and years and years. So maybe there is some bias there, but I do think he's a potential playmaker. He's a big body who I think, especially in the red zone, can be an impact player. And again, with the Eagles so far not making a move to shore up their wide receivers, I mean, you know, who knows what happens with Alshon Jeffrey? Who knows what happens with DeSean Jackson? I mean, maybe they do draft somebody, but I think there's some opportunities for Arcega-Whiteside to go out there this year and maybe be an impact player.
Peter Howard's in the chat right now watching us. He is a proponent of buying second-year wide receivers. I'm not going to go into why, because I think I've misrepresented his point too many times. I just trust him. And if you actually look at, and I think most recent example is 2018, where you saw DJ Moore, Michael Gallup,
Cortland Sutton.
I mean, I'm sure I'm forgetting. Oh, DJ Chark, like, take monster steps forward in their second season. Chark especially, because he didn't do anything in his rookie season. Mm-hmm. So I'm all about buying second-year wide receivers. Really like J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. So I'm on the same wavelength here, but my guy is Paris Campbell.
Okay.
Injured most of last season. T.Y. Hilton's getting up there in age for a wide receiver. I think he's going to enter the season at 32 years old. You get a quarterback who struggled to throw deep last season, was very inaccurate deep. So people should be actually pretty stoked about Tyrod Taylor with Mike Williams, by the way, just because you get a decent deep ball from Tyrod and probably more accurate deep ball at this point. But Paris Campbell played significant amount of snaps from the slot, not so much from T.Y. Hilton. We've seen Phillip Rivers use the slot receiver with Keenan Allen playing in 45% of his snaps from the slot each of the last two seasons. So I think Paris Campbell, after the hype in the second year, the second round draft capital, can take a step this year, especially with somebody like Phillip Rivers, who likely is hopefully not going to be asked to throw it deep too often. So I like Paris Campbell, and I do not like T.Y. Hilton at all this year.
It's funny too, because it used to be third year wide receivers. Like when I first started doing fantasy football seriously, it was kind of the third year wide receiver, and now that timeline has shrunk. And maybe it's because teams are throwing the football more and they're putting more wide receivers on the field. Maybe that has something to do with it. But it is funny how it's gone from, you know, guys in their third year used to sort of pop. Now it's guys in their second year. So maybe we'll get to a point where just like the rookie wide receivers. Although, a couple of years ago, we did have like a ton of rookie wide receivers come in and play well. So who knows?
That might have even been, was it last? Not last year, 2 years ago. Calvin Ridley and right. Yeah.
Yeah, my guy, it's two guys. They're both tight ends. I think both of them are going to have really big seasons this year. One of them's a homer pick. I mean, shoot the messenger if you want to. Noah Fant.
Say it correctly. No.
Noah Fant. However I decide to say it. I can say Albert Ogwegwunam and you can't, so leave me alone with names.
Yeah, I'll say this. You did help me with Dare Ogunbowale.
I did. Dare Ogunbowale, yeah. There you go. Everybody needs a Nigerian in their life, but that's besides the point. Noah Fant, however you decide to say his name. Dude was a beast last year. Only really Courtland Sutton on the other side of that. I don't necessarily see where the Broncos are going to get another high volume receiver. A lot of the chatter is that they're going to draft a speed guy, which I think only helps both Fonts as well as Courtland Sutton.
Yeah, I keep hearing Henry Ruggs' name come up with that.
Exactly. Noah Fant last season had a racer, which is one of Josh Hermsmeyer's metrics. That was actually just around guys like Cooper Kupp, Michael Thomas, not too far from them. He had a decent target share. Again, I don't envision that much competition for targets going into next season. His ADOT was 7.8. So that's not to say that he's only a deep ball threat. He's a guy that can also function close to the line of scrimmage if need be. And then we've seen what the Broncos have bought in. So far, they've focused on the run game. They focused on being able to keep that offense functioning. And I just think that if you get more red zone opportunities for a guy like Noah Fant, that's just going to give him everything that he needs to be, I think, a top eight, a top six tight end going into the season. I don't think he's the only one. Blake Jarwin, he's the only game in town right now at tight end in Dallas. And a lot of the things that I talked about with Noah Fant, at least in terms of athleticism, Blake Jarwin shares as well, not to the level of Noah Fant because Noah Font's off the charts, but Blake Jarwin is not going to have a large amount of competition for targets in that role. And we've seen that role heavily used in Dallas throughout the last couple of years. Blake Jarwin's ADOT is 8.1. So, I mean, he's even operating further down the field than Noah Fant is. And his racer is a little bit higher as well. All I think he needs is targets. All I think he needs is volume. And I really do think that he's in line to get that this year, because I don't think that the Cowboys are just spending money willy-nilly aside from the money that they spent on Ezekiel Elliott. So I think that those two tight ends are going to be very, very valued additions to dynasty rosters this coming season.
That's kind of you to say that Jerry Jones isn't spending money willy-nilly, because that dude, like, man, That dude just like turns on the money faucet and just lets it rain on people.
I don't know how they
except for Dak for some reason.
I don't know how Dak. But yeah, except for they're spending $33 million on him this year. I just don't know where he gets all the money for the, or like I thought this was supposed to be a salary cap league and he's just giving out, like you said, just big monster contracts to players. And I'm like, well, but how? I don't understand. You just gave one to Jalen Smith. Now you're giving one to Zeke and Amari Cooper, and you have Dak on the – ugh, okay.
Didn't you know that the guy from the Monopoly board games with the monocle is Jerry Jones? That's an actual portrait of Jerry Jones handing out the Monopoly money. So that'll be definitely fun to see this year. But we are now going to go ahead and go into the main part of our show. The reason that the show is named the Dynasty Diagnostic, we're going to go and look at a Dynasty roster. So, ladies and gentlemen, let's plug in the analyzer and let's get to this week's Dynasty Diagnostic. Our episode 61 roster was submitted by James Black. You can find him at James Black the Fourth. Please be sure to give him a follow on Twitter. And if you want to be part of next week's show, all you have to do is follow the podcast at Dino Diagnostic. Smash that subscribe button and leave us a review at the link in the description on iTunes and or Podbean. And when I say and or Podbean, I really mean iTunes, people. But let's now go into this roster. It is a 12-team half point per reception. Start one quarterback, two running backs, two wide receivers, one tight end, one flex, one wide receiver, RB flex. At quarterback, we have Dak Prescott, Josh Allen, and the guy we were talking about before, the GOAT of GOATs, Jarrett Stidham. So it's a one quarterback league, Dak Prescott, Josh Allen, Jarrett Stidham. Do we need to talk about this? I mean, you have Dak and Josh Allen. To me, those are two top 10 quarterbacks, probably top 8 quarterbacks. I know Sam hates Josh Allen, but Josh Allen has legs and doesn't care what Sam
thinks. Josh Allen as a passer. Relax. I understand his value as a fantasy football quarterback.
My question to you, Marcus, is this. This is your team for all intents and purposes right now. Mm-hmm. At quarterback, are you doing anything? Do you have to do anything? Do you want to do anything? Do you think there's value to be gained by maybe moving one of those guys?
I think there's some – if you want to move a guy – I mean, maybe the guy you move is Dak right now. I mean, just because you're looking at Josh – The Bills going out and getting Stephon Diggs does some things for Josh Allen. Now, hopefully he can work on his ability as a passer, especially downfield, because you've got two guys now that can potentially get downfield, right? You've got John Brown. You've got Stephon Diggs. That's a big, big help. So there is, I think, some longer-term value, I think, there with Josh Allen right now because, look, with Dak, he's on the franchise tag. I don't think the Cowboys want to go down that Kirk Cousins route where they are franchising him year after year and not sure what they're going to do. So who knows what Dak's future is beyond this season, whereas at least Josh Allen, you know he's going to be in place in Buffalo for a couple of years. So maybe this is the time to try to move Dak. But you know what? If I don't get the right offer for him, I'm fine. I'm fine sitting on it and just kind of like it's staying where I am.
I agree with that. I mean, sell one of Josh Allen or Dak. They're both extremely valuable at this point in time. You can downgrade to, let's just say, and I don't know why I always use Matt Stafford as my guy to buy, but I always use Matt Stafford as my guy to buy. So downgrade like Josh Allen to Matt Stafford in a second, because Matt Stafford was a top three quarterback when he played last season. Mm-hmm. You don't need two top 10 quarterbacks. But like Marcus said, if you can't get something like that, then yeah, you can just tank tight.
It's a one quarterback league. Whether or not you can actually, you know, eke out value for a quarterback is to be seen. But I mean, hopefully you're playing with some people that are maybe a little bit new to fantasy or new to dynasty and new to one quarterback leagues and don't necessarily know that. But yeah, there's just no reason to have both of those guys on this team. They're both young. They're both good. If one of these guys was older, if one of these guys was like Ben Roethlisberger, you know, maybe Ben Roethlisberger even 2 years ago, and then the other one was a Dak Prescott or Josh Allen, then at that point I'd say, yeah, probably hold tight because you're going to need one of these guys pretty soon. But yeah, both of these guys are in the same stage of their careers at this point in time, and it just really doesn't make any sense to have both of these young, talented QBs on your roster unless you absolutely need to. And if you did, I'd expect you to be stacked everywhere else. And I mean, we have a good team. I'm not sure we're completely stacked as much as we could be everywhere else. So we'll move on to that as well. Let's go to the running backs. At running back, Leonard Fournette, James Conner, James White, Jamal Williams, Jalen Samuels, Royce Freeman, Damian Harris, Raquel Armstead, Darwin Thompson, and Duke Johnson, the other DJ in Houston. So at running back, Fournette, Connor is who you're going to be rolling out on a game-to-game basis. Has James White died with Brady moving on? Is that are we done with the James White value, or does that continue? Do you think that an RB3 is needed on this team, assuming health with James Connor, which we can also get into, Marcus?
Yeah, I don't really love any of that. I mean, I'll say that. That's not true. I mean, I like Leonard Fournette. You know, it's funny because Fournette was a guy that last year in a lot of redraft leagues kept falling to me in the third round. And I was sort of like, eh, and I'd hold my nose and I'd draft him. And for the most part, he was fine. He just, for whatever reason, there was a weird force field at the goal line that he couldn't get past or whatever. The rest of that, though, I don't like any of that. I mean, you definitely need some help there. I think James White does keep some value regardless of who the quarterback is, just because – this team doesn't have a whole lot of pass catching options. They've got Julian Edelman and
you better you. A lot of people are going to get angry that you're not
Nikhil Harry. I love Nikhil Harry, right? And maybe he does turn into something. But last year didn't give me a whole lot of optimism about Nikhil Harry. Right. So here's the thing. I loved him at Arizona State. I thought he was going to do good things. Last year didn't happen. So maybe this year something changes my mind. I don't know. So in that respect, James White still does have some value, but there's nothing about that stable of running backs that long term gives me anything to be excited about. That's when you're definitely looking to try and make a move somewhere. Maybe you stumble upon somebody in your rookie draft, or you find a way to make a deal. But that's a situation that needs some help.
Yeah, I mean I'm always for depth, and Fournette, we know, doesn't have the healthiest past. We know James Conner really doesn't have the healthiest past. So those two very easily could go down this season. And then who do you have? James White. I mean, Jamal Williams is fine RB4 because he definitely got his touches last season. But yeah, you need another running back that you can rely on. Unfortunately, right now it's probably rookie running backs, because you have two 2020 firsts. It didn't tell me where they were, but if let's just say they're in the top three or four, then you're looking okay at running back at a third running back. But you still have Fournette and Connor you have to worry about. So I would be making a trade even for a lesser running back, somebody like Boston Scott. I think Raheem Mostert, Damian Williams, like guys like that, where it's like, okay, if one of my two main guys goes down, I can slot these guys in and maybe take a little bit of a loss, but not too much.
Sitting on a cliff's edge here, someone's about to push you off unless you answer this question. 1 to 10, how much faith do you have in James Conner being a bell cow in the 2020 season?
4? I don't know. That...
No, I agree with that. I mean, he just can't, like, he was great for what, 13 games, but right. You can't rely on that year or week in, week out. You can't rely on him to be healthy. So I would think that Jalen Samuels takes some targets, Benny Snell takes some carries.
Yeah, I think
it's a messy situation.
I completely agree, and I think that coupled with the fact that Green Bay has actually come out and said that apparently Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams aren't even enough running backs on that team, that they need a third guy to go ahead and take off some of the pressure from Aaron Jones and from Jamal Williams, I think that makes things with Jamal a little bit more iffy than maybe they even were last year. So I think that running back is definitely a main point of contention on this team, and that's definitely one of the parts that you need to definitely fix as quick as possible. Hello there.
We've added a fourth guest.
I have a I have a co-host. My kid, my son Quentin, has come in, and he apparently doesn't like the James Conner situation either. He seems to be railing against that whole idea.
Getting him started early, I love it.
Absolutely.
He was not excited about the idea of James Conner being a bell cow guy.
Nope.
Say hi, buddy.
Hi, buddy.
All right. So now let's get into wide receivers. We just had a long conversation about this, but I would love to hear your take on this, Marcus, because Sam and I just talked about this on our last podcast. I'm going to list out the wide receivers, and then we can go ahead and start to give our takes. We have New Hopkins. I'm guessing this is Calvin Ridley. If it's Riley Ridley, why? Marvin Jones. Antonio Brown is still on a dynasty roster. Darius Slayton, Auden Tate, Kelvin Harmon, and Jakobi Meyers. Jakobi Meyers might be a guy that we kind of all forgot about as a pass catcher in New England. Maybe there's potentially some value there, but I'm terrified of this wide receiver group. I like Nuke. I don't think D-Hop is going to be the D-Hop of old because I don't think he's going to get 160 targets, 150 targets. I think Sam and I talked about this. I think we see it closer to 130, 120, and any decrease in volume, I mean, that's got to count against a wide receiver. Calvin Ridley, a lot opens up with Austin Hooper outside of the fold. Austin Hooper, I believe, was quote-unquote the number two receiver on that team for the last couple of seasons. Without him there, they're definitely going to need to rely more on Calvin Ridley. And, of course, they have first-round pick Laquon Treadwell to pick up the slack. So, you know, I really think that his targets are assured. But beyond that, Marvin Jones, I mean, Marvin Jones has had sky-high seasons. He's also been injured. We also don't really know how that Detroit offense is going to function, but we hope that Matt Stafford is back to what he was doing last year off injury. After that, Darius Slayton, I think, is a dart throw. I think we're going to see additions to the offensive side of that team in New York. Auden Tate, I don't necessarily know who between Auden Tate or John Ross is the guy that is still relevant if A.J. Green is playing games this season. Kelvin Harmon, I think that ship has sailed. Jakobi Meyers, again, might be the one guy that we might have overlooked in looking at the New England Patriots pass-catching options this season. But I think that we need some help here at wide receiver. Am I alone in that, or do you agree?
I mean, I agree to a point. I think there are some – look, I still sort of believe in Auden Tate. I was kind of promoting him week to week as a potential sleeper as the season went on. And look, A.J. Green's not going to be there much longer, right? I mean, this might be the last go-around for A.J. Green there in Cincinnati. We know Joe Burrow seems like he's coming in to be the quarterback there. So I could see a situation where in 2021 – your wide receiver core is going to be Tyler Boyd and Auden Tate. So I think there's a potential there for him to have something. Jakobi Meyers, look, that one to me depends on who the quarterback is going to be. But I think you're right when you talk about guys like Marvin Jones and what he offers there. I don't know. I think it's sort of a mixed bag at the wide receiver. Look, I will tell you this. I feel better about the wide receivers than I do about the running backs. I don't know if that I don't know if that's really setting a high bar, but I do feel better about that group of receivers than I do about the running backs.
I would feel better about the wide receivers if Nook didn't get traded to the Cardinals. Because you can't necessarily rely on 150 plus targets anymore from DeAndre Hopkins. 120, 130, maybe, but and what does that mean in that offense? I mean, he's never been an ADOT guy. I think he largely relied on volume. So I just don't love him anymore as my wide receiver one. Ridley's great. I mean, there's nothing to talk about with Ridley. He did step up last season. He was better last season. He was more consistent. He's a great wide receiver two. I think Marvin Jones is an okay wide receiver three, but then after that, it just gets really rough. I mean, there's nothing there to back you up this season, and there's there's a lot of question marks. So I think if it really what I'm seeing is you need at least one more reliable running back and at least one more reliable wide receiver.
So I don't have the numbers in front of me. I feel like this past year might have been Duke's worst when it comes to ADOT. I say that anecdotally as somebody who drafted him in a lot of leagues. There was nothing more disheartening or frustrating than seeing him catch a pass and the blue line of scrimmage line was still on the screen. Like, that's like the worst thing ever for your fantasy wide receiver. Like, you don't want that blue line of scrimmage line to be anywhere near your line of sight. And it just seemed like every time he caught the ball, you could see that line on the screen still.
Yeah. I know there were several games last season where you relied a lot on those PPR points. And if he wasn't getting those, you were in trouble.
Yeah, that's because they used Kenny Stills. And then when, you know, the two games that Will Fuller was healthy, they used him as well. He beat all threats on that team. So, you know, maybe that was just a needs-must situation for DeAndre Hopkins. Now, I completely agree. Like I said, I mentioned this even going into this. Targets are going to come down. But, I mean, as the counterpoint to that, if you look at the two quarterbacks, if you look at the two team situations, maybe there's a little bit of hope here. Deshaun Watson was 18th overall in red zone attempts last year. Now, I don't know how sticky that is team to team, year to year, but if you look at Kyler Murray was 10th. That's a significant upgrade in terms of being close enough to the red zone. And it's not like the Arizona Cardinals have a tight end or have a big body that they can go to. Luke is that big body. He's the guy that they brought in to do that, to have that role on that team. So maybe we can see a little bit more touchdown play for Nuke, but I mean, even so, that's banking on a lot.
He is, provided what happens with Hakeem Butler, because that was supposed to be Hakeem Butler's role. He just never got on the field at all last year.
Very sure.
God, I'm really rooting for Hakeem Butler. I was disappointed when they drafted three wide receivers and he was the last one.
And then Keyshawn Johnson was the best one. Anyway,
yeah,
he might be.
Let's now go into tight ends, which I think is the one spot. I mean, maybe not the one spot. I think you're pretty good at QB too, but the one spot on this team that is a shining example to all dynasty owners out there of how to build a position group. We got George Kittle, Mike Gesicki, and Eric Ebron on this roster. Eric Ebron, the new Steeler. We can talk about that in just a moment. Mike Gesicki, I mean, Ryan Fitzpatrick is a DGAF quarterback. I want a DGAF quarterback throwing to basically a slot receiver in Mike Gesicki. And George Kittle is an absolute monster, so we don't even have to spend time on him. But tight end, George Kittle, Mike Gesicki, Eric Ebron. I love this, and it's so beautiful, and I'm so sad that I have to break it up. But for the sake of your wide receiver core, for the sake of your running back core, one of these guys has got to go.
You know which guy has to go. You know which guy has got to go.
Don't say it. Oh, please don't say it.
I don't want to say it.
Don't say it.
It's George Kittle.
Oh.
I mean, if you want to really make an impact here, with George Kittle on those two firsts, you can get those requisite running backs, and you probably want two wide receivers here. George Kittle and those two firsts can provide that. I mean, with the first, you can get probably a rookie running back, hopefully who lands in a good situation. I would be trading that second pick for a lower wide receiver. I think Tyler Lockett, Tyler Boyd, Cooper Kupp in that kind of area. And then George Kittle probably nets you a decent tier two wide receiver. And then I feel a lot better about this lineup or this roster.
And you are right. Everything you say makes sense. It just hurts my heart to hear it.
No, I mean, listen, when he is the best fantasy tight end at this point. And it's tough to trade like those top end assets. That's the one thing about fantasy football. I think a lot of people have a hard time with is being objective about their rosters. And you sit there and you're like, I get it. Like George Kittle, elite option. But what is the best team best thing for me going forward on this team? And it's probably to sell those guys who are like peak value that you can break down into more good players, more assets that would make you maybe not as your ceiling's not as great, but your floor and your consistency is a lot better.
And you can afford to do this on this roster. Last episode, if you guys tuned in, I spoke a lot about really, really being heavily invested in one or two positions for the purpose of giving you the flexibility to go ahead and move out of those assets to fix other parts of your team when you need to. Mike Gesicki is going to be a tight end one this year. It's going to happen. There is a possibility that Eric Ebron sneaks into tight end one as well as a Pittsburgh Steeler. And if that's the case, then, I mean, you don't have to worry about replacing George Kittle when you trade him. You just have to get other assets at other parts of this team to at least have a competitive roster as a whole. And then maybe you can go ahead and use a later round pick on getting another hyper-athletic tight end that in 2 or 3 years maybe works out for you. But I think this is an example of building unbalanced in a way that allows you to be more flexible down the line when you've identified the specific parts of your roster that you need to upgrade to go ahead and be more of a competitive team. So we hate to say it, but Stompy's completely right. George Kittle's the guy that needs to go on this team.
We hate to say it, but Stompy is right. That
describes our relationship.
That feels like an elbow, man. Like he just like came with a flying elbow drop, man. That's
yeah. We kind of take pot shots at each other once in a while.
Oh man, this was a fun time. This was a fun time. But this is now the most important part of this, Marcus. Our podcast is called the Dynasty Diagnostic. We bring people into our shop, into our service center, and we diagnose their team. So think about this team in terms of car terms. What is this team to you if it was a car? And what do you need to do to go ahead and get this team back on track?
Well, look, I mean, for the most part, this car still runs, right? Like it you can get it out there on the road and it'll get you a decent ways. It's not going to get you maybe if you're trying to take a long trip, if you're trying to go cross country, go coast to coast. I don't know that this car is going to quite get you there. Well, think of this as like 2020? So this is like a 2005 Honda Accord, right? Like it runs well. It's got a lot of miles on it, but it'll get you quite a ways. I think you need a little bit more in the engine right now, right? You just got to get something that we talked about the wide receivers, we talked about the running backs. You kind of need that. So I guess in that respect, you kind of need more on the tires, right? Your tires are a little bit thin, a little bit low on the tread. So if you can do that, kind of get some more all weather tires, something that's going to get you the distance. I think that helps you get there. You got a good engine with the quarterbacks. You got a good body, a good foundation with the tight ends. You just need a little bit more on the tires. And I think that'll help get you all the way to the finish line.
So this is one of those cars that on the outside look fantastic. Like, let's just say it's like a 2020, 2021. Cause we're going into that now. But you got like standard package, like crank windows. It's a gear shift or it's a manual. Like your radio is basically just a tape deck and there's no like XM radio or anything. That's what this reminds me of. On the outside, you look great. Look, you have names, Dak, Josh Allen, Fournette, Connor, DeAndre Hopkins, Calvin Ridley, George Kittle. But then you start to dig out, look inside, dig a little bit underneath, look at it more, and you're like, oh man, this is pretty basic. I mean, beyond that shiny exterior and how good it looks on the outside, it's just not, it's not a luxury vehicle by any means. It's not something that I would want to drive like across a state or across the nation with, because it's just that it doesn't have all of the things that I need in a car.
Yeah, I mean, for me, you showed up to the pink slip race without Nas. Like, you just decided that you didn't need that extra boost, that you were going to be fine with your jalopy Honda Civic, and it's not getting it done. You're not going to beat those big muscle cars unless you have that juice in the tank that's going to get you go just a little bit faster, a little bit further. And that's what we're talking about with this team. We like the team, I think. I think I speak for everyone when we say, look, like Sloppy was saying, this is a team with talent. Like, you got Nuke, you got Kittle, you got the pieces to be successful here, but you need the whole thing to operate as one. You need to make sure that nothing breaks down. You need everything perfect to get to the playoffs. And then whether or not you can even compete at that point, I'm not sure. This car needs boost. You need to sell one of these Bane assets, either D-Hop or Kittle, for multiple young assets to give you a longer championship window. And again, to provide you more flexibility down the line so you can go ahead and address problems as they show up. So I like this team. I think we all do. But you're still one or two pieces away from being a true title contender. I think this is a playoff team without juice. All right, so that is going to take us almost to the end of our podcast, but really quickly, before we return the keys, Marcus, I wanted to ask you, you've had the pleasure of speaking to so many NFL players, speaking not even just NFL players, but to athletes kind of all over the place. I wanted to ask you, I mean, obviously you talk to a lot of prospects that are coming in to their league. Is there, you know, one or two kind of attributes or one or two things that maybe you're listening for that kind of give you a key into having a little bit of an understanding of what it really takes to be an impact player in any league, really?
You know, I think it's what is it? Like they say with, like, you know, with art, you know, like, I can't define it, but you know it when you see it. And I think it's sort of like that, right? Like, I don't know if there's one thing you can quantify, because I think for all these guys, right, like, nobody or very few guys go into professional sports half-heartedly. I mean, I think there are guys out there who do play because they are talented and it's a good way to make some money. But I think most of these guys go in there expecting to be successful and trying to win. And I think it's sort of hard to pinpoint one thing, but I do think you just kind of feel from guys like a seriousness about their craft and a desire to actually be great. And it's just not a thing that I think you can just pinpoint and say, like, hey, they say A, B, and C, and you know this guy's going to be a star. But it's just about a way a guy carries himself, or, you know, or a woman carries herself. And you can just sort of see it and feel it about them. I mean, like, people have a presence. And I think it's just one of those things when you're around somebody and you kind of feel or see that presence. That you're like, okay, this person has it, and this person has the opportunity to be successful if they land in the right situation.
Love it. Love it. Great final point to this podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us. That is it for today. Please make sure to follow your head technicians, myself at Eitan Mosia, Sam at FF Stompy, Marcus Grant at Marcus Grant. And please go to the Dynasty Diagnostic Podcast feed on iTunes. Give us a 5-star rating and review. It helps the podcast grow and reach more listeners. Over to you, Stompy.
Yeah. Patreon.com/DinoDiagnostic. We have several different levels, but we share like live links for our podcasts. You get t-shirts, stuff like that. You get to chat with an awesome group of people. So patreon.com/DinoDiagnostic, help support us. And then FF pod shirts on storeenvy.com. That is Dynasty Outhouse's shirt store. We are in there with shirts, stickers, Trade Addicts pod shirts, stickers, mugs, sweaters, or sweatshirts. Who else? Superflex Super Show and Top Shelf PF or FF. So go support that. Go support us there. You also 10% of proceeds go to Fantasy Cares. So support a good cause, Scott Fish's charity, and us as well.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for making it to the Dynasty Diagnostic Service Center today. Please be sure to keep up with your scheduled maintenance and catch us next time to ensure quality performance. See you on your next visit. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the Dynasty now. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see, yeah. Pop the hood, tell me what you see.
Tell me what you see. It's the Dynasty Diagnostic. Popped it, now your team is the topic. Eitan and Stompy as a team, they're unstoppable. All bold, but no bold. It is rolling a roll that I'm told. Comparable to a cockpit. And I just hope there's no leaks. Yeah. I ain't changed my oil in weeks. Yeah. How'd I get all of these stains on my seat? Yeah. Only mechanics that I trust cause it's free. Yeah. Pop the hood. Tell me what you see. It's my dynasty team and it's got a couple needs. Is it this? Is it that? Is it picks? Is it bad? Do I even have a chance? Do I got it in the bag? Let me know. Pop the hood. Tell me what you see. Pop the hood. Tell me what you see. Pop the hood. Tell me what you see. Tell me what you see. It's the dynasty now. Nah. Pop the hood. Tell me what you see. Now. Nah. Pop the hood, tell me what you see, yeah. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the dynasty. Diagnostic, gnostic.